Inside this week is Parashas Yisro. You all know Shabbos of Matan Torah. So let's begin by reviewing a very important Yisoid. We probably say this over in the past, so no doubt we must have said this over before. Yisoid is from Rabbi Moshe Wolfson, the Mashkiach of Yeshiva Torah Vadas and the Rav of Kehilas Emunas Yisrael in Borough Park. And he has a very, very, very beautiful Yisoid. Question is, we lay in Parashas Yisro twice a year. Which Kriya, when we lay in Parashas Yisro, Matan Torah, is more choshev, is more significant, carries more weight? If you only can go to Shul, Parashas Yisro or Matan Torah, which one of the two would be more important to attend? That's really a theoretical question. The answer is, I think the average person would say, of course, Shavuos. Shavuos, we learned it Shavuos, and we learned it Parshas Yisro, Matan Torah, on Vav Sivan, when we commemorate the calendar day of Matan Torah, of course, that is the most significant thing possible. That's our history. That's when we became the Mamleches Koyanim, the Goy Kadosh. Parshas Yisro, it's nice. It's very nice. We learned Parshas Yisro. It's part of conquering Kol HaTorah Kula, and we pass through the Aseres Adibros, so it's a nice thing, but it's not as significant as the Yom Tov of Matan Torah. So he says just the opposite. And what's the proof? Before we explain the Lomdis, what's the proof why it's more choshev to learn Parashas Yisro, this week is more choshev Matan Torah than Shavuos? Look at the Haftarah. What do we learn from the Haftarah of Parashas Yisro? We learn Yeshaya. We learn the Merkava. Okay, we're really heavily steeped now in the Merkava, so we can appreciate this a little bit more. Learning Sefer Yechezkel, learning the Merkava today. So there are two sections in Tanakh, two different Nevi'im that describe the Merkava in detail, Yeshaya and Yechezkel. When we read Parashas Yisro, we lay in the Haftarah from Sefer Yeshaya. When we Shavuos, Matan Shavuos, the first day Shavuos, which Haftarah do we read? We read the Merkava from Sefer Yechezkel. Now, between the two, Yeshaya and Yechezkel, which one of the two is more choshev? Which one of the two carries more weight? Without question, Yeshaya. Yeshaya lived 200 years before Yechezkel. Yeshaya's Merkava, Yeshaya's description is of the words Kadosh, 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 Hashem Tzivakos, Meloi Chol Ha'aretz Kivaydai. Whereas Yechezkel, he did not know where he said, Baruch Kivayda Hashem Mimikoymai. He cannot identify the Mokoyim. Yeshaya could identify Hashem's Mokoyim. Meloi Chol Ha'aretz. Yechezkel could not identify the Mokoyim. He said, it's Mimikoymai. And Chazal also go on to explain the reason why Yeshaya was in a much higher madrig was because Yeshaya was like a Ben Krach. It's like a person who lives in Washington, D.C. Every other day you see the president's entourage. Yechezkel was a person who was like a Kvar, Ish Kfar, who lives in the village. It's a novelty to be able to see Hashem's miracle. So Chazal in many different ways explain that Yeshaya's Nevuah, his vision of the Merkava, is on a much higher exalted level than of Yechezkel. If Chazal have selected that we read the Haftorah of Yeshaya on Parshas Yisro and the Ma'aseh Merkava of Yechezkel on Shavuos, that is a statement that the Kriyas HaTorah of Yisro is more choshev than the Kriyas HaTorah, is more significant than the Kriyas HaTorah of Matan Torah. Okay, that's a different shavuos. Not for now. I don't want to go into now. I know that's a little different. That's a little different. That's a review. It's a little different. Mishnah Torah, there's a lot of answers, but not for now. So I want to bring out the point of why it's so important. Why this Shabbos is such a significant Shabbos. So what's taka the reason? Why should it be so? Why should it be so? The answer is because Shavuos was smoke and mirrors. When you have a significant event, okay, so you go to a wedding, you get all dressed up, you have good food, and then what happens the next day? Business as usual. Back to the life of reality. It's an escape. You go to a simcha, you have something of a very wonderful event. It's a wonderful event. But it's not part of my daily routine. When you lay the Matan Torah as part of Kiddusha de Sidra, it's part of the Seder. It's part of life. This is a chelik. We're learning the Matan Torah is part of the Parshios HaShavua. This is our Seder HaChayim. We incorporate the Kedusha, the event of Matan Torah, into our daily schedule, into our cycle of life. When it's part of your DNA, when it's second nature, it's natural, that is last, not last forever. That has an effect on you. This is permanent. It's who you are. When you do something once a year, and it's a wonderful thing, and you get dressed up, and you make believe, it's nice. Hopefully it will have an impact, it will trickle down, but it's not, it's something you have to work to aspire to. The proof is, after Matan Torah, what happened after Matan Torah? 50 days later, what happened? They worshipped the Egel. It was Matan Torah. After Matan Torah, you design B'tamus, they worshipped the Egel, and Moshe came down and shouted, they worshipped the Egel, and Moshe shouted the Luchas. It's wonderful, it's what to learn from, it's significant, but when it's part of the Seder, the Kedusha, the Sidra, this has much more meaning and much more effect. Therefore, when we are now entering into Parshas Yisro, we have to really have that appreciation that it's not just, oh, we got lucky, we're just passing through the Parshas, and this week we're learning about Matan Torah. To a very large degree, the Matan Torah, the Kabbalah Torah that we experience tomorrow, is even more significant than the Matan Torah that we commemorate on Vav Sivan. Yes, to a certain degree, yes. Yes. You relive the experience. All the Mefarshim explain that. It's not just when you read the Parsha, okay? It's Hashkocha. When you read the Parsha, you are reliving the experience. You're putting yourself in the shoes of the people living at that time, and you are...
What did they do in Bravo when they're laying 3 years?
So they didn't have the experience. They only had the experience once in 3 years. That's right. Only it was once in 3 years. It was a different type of experience, different type of life. Okay, let's go through the Parsha. Vayish Yisroel. Yisro hears Koyim Midyan Chaytzin Moshe Eis Kol Asher Osa Elokim LeMoshe LeYisrael Amok Yotzia Hashem Yisrael MiMitzrayim. Yisro hears, and I want to tell you for now, which is what you would teach, what you would say over to a class of new reporters, anyone that wants to go into journalism and is taking journalism 101. So this is a word for journalism 101. Yisro gets the report. What?
Real news.
Yisro, he sitting at home in Midian, he gets the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, he goes online, CNN, whatever you want to do, whatever, okay? No, let's not get political here. He goes online to read his news. And what does it say? Vayishma Yisro. Rashi, Mashmua Shamuba. What was the headlines of the day? What were the headlines of the newspaper? Mashmua Shamuba, Kriyas Yamsuf, Umulchemes Amalek. Okay, now how does the pasuk describe this? Eis kol asher osa Elokim l'Moshe, what Hashem did to Moshe, uli Yisrael amo, ki yotzi Hashem es Yisrael mimitzrayim. And Rashi defines what is captured in those words. What's captured in those words are Kriyas Yamsuf and Mulchemes Amalek. Okay, let's go further. Let's jump ahead a few psukim. Vayavo Yisrael chaysein Moshe. He tells Moshe, I'm here. Moshe comes out. Next pasuk. Here's the pasuk I want to get to. Moshe tells his father-in-law, Eis kol asher osa Hashem lefaro ulemitzrayim al oidos Yisrael. Eis kol hatila, all of the difficulty Asher mitzvosam baderech that they encountered on their travels, vayatzileim Hashem. So in other words, what does Moshe tell Yisro? Moshe tells Yisro about Yitzias Mitzrayim, Kriyas Yamsuf, and Amalek. In other words, Yisro comes and Moshe says, Yisro, did you see the New York Times? Here it is. Here's the New York Times. What are you? You read the Wall Street Journal? Let me show you the Wall Street Journal. You prefer CNN? Here, I'll take out my smartphone. I'll show you what it says on CNN. I'll show you. Did you read the news? You know what happened? So Yisro looks at Moshe Rabbeinu. Why do you think I'm here? Well, you're giving me the New York Times. I get the New York Times back in Midian.
In Midian.
What is Moshe Rabbeinu coming here to be Mechadesh to Yisro that he doesn't already know? That's why he came. Vayishma Yisrael. What's going on? This is the extra psukim. What is more than extra psukim? These words are superfluous. Moshe's behavior is bizarre. Who asked this kasha? Rav Eliashiv, Zechet Tzadik Livracha, asked this kasha. So now he doesn't really explain. I'm trying to elaborate upon what his answer is. He just says the answer in two words, but I want to elaborate upon his answer. And the answer is very posh. The answer is, it's a matter of perspective. Moshe Rabbeinu said, Yisrael, I know you read the New York Times. I know you read the Wall Street Journal. I know you saw online the whole story. But let me tell you something. It's fake news. It's all fake news. You want to know the real story?
I'll tell you.
Let me tell you the real story. Let me tell you. Let me give you a perspective. That's MS. Let me take the facts. Let me take the facts and let's go over the details from a different perspective. That's true. Das Torah. And look now, when you have that idea, look at what it says. Look at the way it's described. When Yisro heard what happened, the way it's described is, "Eis kol ha'sha'asa Elokim leMoshe." Hashem, in the newspapers, they reported what Hashem did for Moshe, the hero of the day. In the headlines is Moshe. He was the hero. Uli Yisrael amo. They were also the heroes. There are no villains. There's no evil in this world. There's no mention that there's an Amalek. There's no mention that there's a Paro. There's only Hashem did something good for Klal Yisrael. Hashem did something good for Moshe Rabbeinu. That's what I read in the newspaper. I'm impressed. I want to come. I want to join. Moshe said, "You got it all wrong. That's not really what happened." Moshe says, "Eis kol asher osa Hashem lefaro." This wasn't about me. It wasn't about Klal Yisrael. It was about evil. Paro was a Russia. He wanted to eradicate Klal Yisrael. Ule Mitzrayim. It was about Paro. That's what the story was all about. Al odos Yisrael. We were secondary. Concerning what they wanted to do to Hashem's chosen nation. Eis kol hatila'ah. And then he goes on to say, you read in the newspaper that it was wonderful. We went in the midbar, and there was man, and there is the be'er, and everything is rosy. It wasn't like that. We had a lot of difficulty when we traveled in the desert. Eis kol hatila'ah. We suffered quite a bit as we traveled in the desert. It was a lot of yisurim. Asher mitzosam baderech. Vayatzileim Hashem. And we didn't survive because koichi v'oitzem yodli osili achayel hazeh. It wasn't because the Iron Dome. Iron Dome is what saved us. It wasn't because we had all the best warplanes and the best military and the best tanks. Hashem saved us. So I want to let you know that the story that you read in the newspaper is literally fake news. It's fake news. Let me give you the real story, the real perspective. And this is a yesod in life. Just because you hear a report, it's not is the way.
What do you mean,
because Moshe was there?
That's
but Moshe is now giving a report of what happened. No, it's not necessarily true. There were people that saw what happened. The people who reported this into the newspapers and when the Yishma Yisrael. You're going to tell me they weren't first-hand eyewitnesses of what happened? You have a right to say that when Yisrael heard what happened in Mitzrayim and Amalek, they were Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim came and told them what happened. He had first-hand report, people who saw it. The same way Moshe is giving him eyewitness account of what happened, the people who gave Yisrael the report were eyewitnesses of what happened.
They all drowned. What do you mean?
Pyro didn't drown.
Okay.
Or other things. They were all observers. The UN observers. They were not from Egypt. The journalists. They were embedded. You have to. But they were corrupt. They had an agenda. And what's very interesting is Yisrael left. Everyone is Tekash. Why did Yisrael disappear? Vayelech Yisrael. He turned back to his land. What did you come here for? Vayishma Yisrael. Ma shmua shoma uba. You know why he came? He came because he believed what it said in the media. That's why the way they described it is that Moshe was the big hero and Klal Yisrael was the big hero. V'chulu v'chulu. If that's the way it really happened, I want to be part of this. What he found out from Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, it's not so simple. This life is a lot more complicated than that. And there's no such thing as Kleiti V'Yotzim Yadi. And you have to rely upon HaKadosh Baruch Hu V'Yatzilem Hashem. And you have to know who Amalek is. And you have to know the whole story. It takes a big Baal Madrega to still want to be part of Klal Yisrael. And Yisrael said, you know, maybe it's not for me. And Vayelech Yisrael, he returned back home into his land. That's the ultimate proof that he got a true perspective. And this is a Musar Haskel, of course, for us, is we're always hearing reports of things that are happening, whether we're talking about world history, whether we're talking about what's doing by our family and friends, v'chulu v'chulu. Whatever's going on is going on. But you have to know, you have to have, even if you know, you have to have the right perspective. And the only one that can give you the right perspective is someone like Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, Das Torah. Okay, obviously today it's very, very hard to find Das Torah that we are comfortable. I know everyone has to connect to their Rav, to their Rashiva, to their Gadol, but there has to be proper perspective like we find here. Moshe is setting the record straight. Okay, let's go to another idea.
Then Yisrael know that Hashem split the sea. So Yisrael knew that
there's
Hashem,
more to just splitting the sea. There's an entire perspective as to what happened.
Yisrael knew part of it.
Okay, we could talk afterwards. There are different ideas that have to be explained. Okay, let's go now to another idea.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, let's go. Let's jump ahead a little bit. Let's jump ahead to the next section of Yisrael comes to complain to Moshe Rabbeinu that Lo Toiv Hadavar Asher Ato Oseh. Moshe, in the second Aliyah, Vahim Yimocharas, is after Yom Kippur, Vayeshev Moshe Ben Lishboit Esam. Vayamar Amal Moshe Ben Rebekev Yad Oreh. People are coming to Moshe Rabbeinu, they're lining up from morning to leaving the night. Vayar Chosim Moshe Iskol Asher Hu Oseh La'am Vayomer Mohadar Hazeh Asher Ato Oseh La'am. Madu Ato Yoshev Lo Odech V'Cholam Nitzav Olecha Min Boiker Ad Oreh. And Moshe goes on to say, they're coming to me Lidroi Shalokim. We'll come back to that a little later. And Yisrael says, it's not a good idea what you're doing. Yisrael says, let me find the pasuk I'm looking for. Vayomer Chosin Moshe Elov Loi Toiv Hadavar Asher Ato Oseh. This is a short vart. Novol Tibol. You will wither. Rashi says, like the lesson of withering. Gamata, Gamaom, Hazeh Asher Imach Hichavei Bimcha Hadavar Lo Sucha Lasohu Livadech. How do you translate? How do you understand this pasuk? Similar interpretation is the workload is just overwhelming. It's too much. Moshe, you're putting in 18-hour days. You can't survive. You may be able to survive a week, a month, 2 months. They're going to finish you off. You can't work 18 hours a day and expect to survive and to be a healthy person and live on. And maybe you can do it, but what's going to be with your successor? What's going to be in the future? Novol Tibol. Isn't that the Pashup Shah and the Pasik?
Yeah.
You can't do it alone. You have to go and have a division of labor, a hierarchy, things which are delegate tasks, things that are difficult, things which are light, v'chulu v'chulu. That's the Pshutoi Shal Mikra. No one is denying that is a simple interpretation. I wanted to say a teeny little drush. Yisrael begins his words with his criticism with the words Loi Toiv. The words Loi Toiv are very powerful words. They're used in the beginning of the Torah by none other than the Ribbonoi Shel Olam himself. And to whom does he use these words? To Adam, to a Bachur. Adam Harishon was a Bachur, bachelor. And Hashem said, it's not good to be a bachelor. Loi toif hayois adam levadai es eloi ezer kinegdai. What do Chazal explain ezer kinegdai? What is the tafkid of an isha? What is the pasuk say? Pshutoshal Mikra. We don't have to go into any philosophy, any experience. Just talk about the Pshutoshal Mikra. A wife is a check. In ezer, when you're good, she makes you better. And when you're no good, that makes you worse. She corrects you. She is kinegdai. Okay? You can spot a bacher a mile away, even if he's not wearing a talis. Okay? Just look at the way someone is dressed. He's dressed either too good or too schlumpy. You know he's a bacher. If he's dressed too good, if he was married, he wouldn't have the time to to be so meticulous, and if he's a shlom, it means that no one is taking care of him for whatever reason. A person, a wife is an ezer kinego. If you're good, she'll make you better. If you're no good, she will make sure she'll keep you in line. Hashem is, Yisro is saying to Moshe, first of all, Yisro brings his wife. Okay, that's number one, is bringing his wife. That's a very important point. He mentioned that a few times. It says twice, three times it says he came with his wife. Why are we emphasizing he came with his wife and children? Yisro is saying to Moshe, lo tov hadavar asher ato oiseh, novol tibol, he will wither away. Why? You will become corrupt. Power corrupts some of the time. Absolute power corrupts all of the time. Moshe Rabbeinu, you're all alone. Lo suchol aso livadecha. You're going to become corrupt. You have too much power. Lo tov hadavar. Just like a person who is single becomes corrupt, doesn't necessarily mean in power. There's no one to be the ezer kinego, the checks and balances. You may, who says Moshe was working 18 hours a day? Maybe Moshe worked 2 hours a day. It was a very light workload. Moshe Rabbeinu had Klal Yisrael in the palm of his hand. He knew exactly what to do. He was so organized. There was no waste. Everything was al mikoymoy. They would not have any questions. He was able to solve all the problems in a matter of a few minutes. And Moshe had plenty of time to play golf. Whatever he needed to do. Moshe had plenty of time. It doesn't matter. If you're all alone, novol tibol, you will wither from within. You will wither due to corruption because you're all alone. There has to be checks and balances. If you all have a hierarchy of the lower courts, the medium courts, v'chulu v'chulu, you'll always be under pressure. There'll always be other people checking your decisions. There'll be a system in place. And that will guarantee that there will not be corruption. Perhaps that is a different approach to understand what it means, loy, the significance of why it says loy toiv, and then he begins to say novol tibol, because it is a chiddush to say that Moshe Rabbeinu could not handle the workload. Why not? Moshe was the malach elokim. Moshe went to Shemayim. Arboy miyom lo yachalti, lechem lo yashasis, didn't eat, didn't drink. Is it all about how much time he spent working? Is that really what it's all about? Not necessarily. Some people are very talented. Some people need to work very hard to keep them, to keep themselves in a proper frame of mind.
Trump sleeps 4 hours a night.
Stira. Trump says he sleeps 4 hours a night, but his staff says that at 6 o'clock, 6:30, he's already finished for the day. He goes upstairs to watch television. It's a stira. A stira in the Rambam. So how was the answer? Eilu ve'eilu. Okay, yeah, yeah.
Why did Moshe Rabbeinu come to this conclusion himself?
Where he had a... Moshe is also a human being. Moshe Rabbeinu felt, I'm above the law. That's human nature. Moshe Rabbeinu, or maybe he's planning for the next generation. Too much power corrupts. There has to be a division of labor. Okay, let's go one more short dish. What?
This was the very first day he started.
Okay, so Yisro was a chacham, pikech. He saw Ezeh chacham, Raya Senoilat. He saw the system in place. He saw this not a good system.
And eventually all these fights will stop. I mean, between people, no?
Okay, it's a drush. It's a machshava. Yeah, it's a rayon. This is, you have to kachi darka shel drush. You have to be mine. Let's go next idea. Another idea. Yeah. In how many years? Not that long. Only a year or two.
A year.
And Yisro's coming, and he's bringing his wife and kids, and the Torah mentions the exchange that Yisro has with Moshe, but
what happened with the wife and children?
Nothing at all about.
Does it make any mention of what happened with his wife and children? So it says that Yisro went back, which implies that his wife stayed.
But there's no.
It doesn't say. It doesn't mention it. It does not.
That's
it does
why,
not mention
it.
You're asking a very good question. I once saw a clip online where they were training soldiers. Listen to the clip. They had a class on a Navy destroyer that was at sea for 6 months, and they had there these young guys whose wives, when they left their wife when their wives were pregnant with their first child. And they were telling them, you're going to come home in a few days, and who's going to be at the dock to greet you? Your wife and your newborn baby. They're going to come running up to you with the baby. So they were telling them, who do you greet first? What do you do when you see your wife and child and your newborn child for the first time? It's already been 6 months. Do you embrace the baby, the infant, or do you embrace your wife?
Wife.
So they said, don't make a mistake, wife. Don't go for the baby. Go for the wife. The wife is the one who you married. This is the yikar. It made an impression upon me. You have to know your priorities. So Dr. Fruchter, you're asking an excellent question. Excellent question. Who's coming here to greet Moshe after a year? Yisro, the wife, and the children. So who should Moshe? So from the online clip we learned, don't go for the children. So now we're down between the wife and the father-in-law, the shrek. So what's Moshe doing? L'chari should greet his wife first, not the shrek. Okay, good question. It's a good question. I don't know the answer. There's obviously a lesson to be learned. We'll take questions afterwards. Okay, let's go to the next class. The next idea we want to discuss is Vayelech. Moshe, he asks, it's just a short idea. This is not a complete idea. It's something to think about. Because this word only appears one other place in the Torah. So obviously there must be a connection. What am I referring to? Moshe, Yisrael comes to Moshe, and Yisrael complains, what are you doing, Moshe? This is no good. No good. My son-in-law, you're no good. Navol Tibol. Moshe responds, and Moshe says, let me explain to you what's going on over here. He says to him, give me one moment. They're coming to seek out God. Then he goes on to say, I teach them, there's a long list of things that I do. But the first thing that I do is, the way he defines what's happening is people are coming, lidroish elokim. What does it mean, lidroish elokim? They're coming to seek out, we have a machlekes, we have a business dispute. Did I steal? Is there a copyright violation? Is there a hasagas gevul shilus? Is that what it means? Lidroish elokim? I mean, obviously, yeah, this mishpat, we go on later on. But is that really what it means, lidroish elokim? The only other, what?
Say that it's a unique expression.
So where is the other place where it says Lidroi Shalokim? Where exactly? That's the only other place. That's exactly what I'm saying. There's only one other place, B'chol HaTorah Kula, where this expression is used, and that is by Rivka. Rivka was pregnant with twins. When she passed the base of Avodah Zarah, the baby wanted to come out. When they passed the base of Hamedrash, the baby wanted to come out. And she was disturbed. What does Rashi there say? I have so much tsar. I have so much pain. Does it mean physical pain? Or does it mean spiritual pain? That's a question. What does Rivka mean? The baby is kicking. What, she's in physical pain? Is that really what it means? She's in physical pain? Many women have a lot of hana when the baby is kicking inside of their womb, which means the baby, Baruch Hashem, is alive and well.
Yeah, but so what? Two fighting ones.
Oh, they're fighting. So does it mean that she was in physical pain? Ad kedei kach, where she says, Lama zeh anochi, why did I bother getting pregnant? Why did I bother 10 years being mispalel that I should be pregnant? Who needs this? There was so much physical pain, really? Maybe, yeah. Or maybe she was so disturbed. How could it possibly be that I'm going to have a child that wants to go to a base Avodah Zarah the same time who wants to go to a base Medrash? Maybe that's what it means. It means the spiritual pain. And therefore, what did she say? Vatelech lidrei ses Hashem. So what do you learn from this pasuk? You learn this pasuk is that when a person has tsar, a person is in anguish, whether it's physical pain, whether it's mental anguish, and you complain, why did I bother? Why did I work so hard? People, I mean, every person, they work their whole life to accomplish something, to raise a family, to raise their children, to work, to get a job, to work your way up in your career. People spend their whole life with a mission. And it's very hard and it's very painful. And she says, Lama zanach, I wasted my whole life. 10 years down the drain. I wanted to get pregnant. Better I have not gotten pregnant to have such a child. Batelech lidro shalokim. People here, they're coming to Moshe Rabbeinu, not just for shilas, not just for questions, hasagas gevul, gezel. They're coming to Moshe as a psychologist. They're coming, what's life all about? Why? What's this? What's going on over here? We're working so hard to serve Hashem, Yitzias Mitzrayim, to accomplish something, and we're getting nowhere. We're getting nowhere in life. It's a very It's a very frustrating, it's a very powerful expression when it says here, every single person here, Chazal are telling us, is no different than Rivka. You think there's only one Rivka? There are 600,000 people just like Rivka, who work hard to become pregnant, meaning to accomplish, to prepare, to build, to accomplish, and you hit a brick wall. And worse than hitting a brick wall. Everything you possibly did to prepare for this, the results are just the opposite. The child wants to go to worship of the Zara. Maybe that's not so bad. But if he also wants to go to the Beis Medrash, the same time he wants to go to worship of the Zara, that's really bad. That's a hypocrite. That's even worse. You want to be a good priest. You want to be a bishop. You want to be a cardinal. Okay, maybe it's not so bad. But to be a Talmud Chacham who's a Kofer, this is the worst. So, Vatelech Lidresh Hashem. I need help. I need help, guidance in understanding, getting me through the difficulties in life, the struggles of life, keeping me on the right path. Like Moshe was a Rebbe. That's what they complain. I can't give a wonderful shiur on this idea. This idea. You know, people who did not grow up in the Hasidic world. You know, Hasidim, they don't a real chassid. I don't even know today if you have so many real chassidim. A real chassid doesn't move an inch without the Rebbe. The Rebbe tells him what time to wake up, what every little what to eat for breakfast. The Rebbe will tell. And that's an extreme version. By the Litvaks, don't tell me what to do. The Torah ha'emidu talmidim harbe. The Torah gave a person the right to decide on his own. It's a completely different approach to life. A Litvak versus a Chassid. A Litvak is 100% independent. You make your own decisions and that's a Hana. That's a very great Hana. Chassidim, real Chassidim if there are some. No, you live your life according. People make a decision for you. Some people need to be told what to do. But there's a trade-off. A person who has a Rebbe can go to the Rebbe and pour out his heart and say to the Rebbe, I have a tzara. I have a problem in life. And I don't know what to do. I just don't know what to do. I'm up against a brick wall. That's what a Rebbe does 90% of the time. It's not a fun job being a Rebbe. 99% of what a Rebbe does is listen to people's, not even counseling, because there's nothing to counsel. What are you going to tell these people? I heard this from many times from different shiurim. 90% of what rabbis do today, they go to rabbis, to yechidus with the rabbi. What do they do with the rabbi? What do the good rabbis do? They just sit and listen to tzaras. And what could they do? Give you advice? I'm not a doctor. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a psychologist. And maybe you're a referral service? I know a rav. A rav told me, I know a chasher rav. He told me, what am I? I'm just a referral service. That's what I do the whole day. People come to me, they need a job, they need a doctor, they need this. That's all I do. I'm a referral service. What, shiurim? I don't have time to give shiurim. I don't have time to do anything else. I just have to listen to people's problems, and I can help them. So I refer them to people that hopefully can make believe they can help them. Litvak doesn't have a Rebbe. If you don't have a Rebbe, when you got a problem, what do? You keep it to yourself. And you eat, and you, no, Rashid says, oh, that means that today all Rashivas are Rebbes today.
Yeah.
Where everyone is barring. But it's not a real Rashiva. A real Rashiva doesn't have time. A real Rashiva is Kula Torah. A real literature Rosh Hashiva. I'm not here to go and see problems. I'm here to learn. How do you expect me to have Torah? You learn Yoimim V'Layla. That's a real literature Rosh. That was the Rosh Hashivas.
Not Rebbes. Modified Rebbe.
Today, everything is a big mishmash. Every Rebbe today, you have to be a Talmud Chacham. You should be a Talmud Chacham. And every Rosh Hashiva today is a Rebbe. But Me'ikar Hadin, if you're a Litvak, there's a Hana, then you make your own decisions. But there's a very big tsar problem that when a person has a tsara, there's really no one to go to. And you have to deal with it, sorry, on your own. When you have a Rebbe that you believe in, you go to the Rebbe, you can let it all out. So I think he mentions Rav Kefet, Rav Yosher Ber Soloveitchik said this. If I'm not mistaken, he said that he's Mekane the Hasidim. Because when he had difficulties in life, he needed someone who he can pour out his heart to. And he doesn't have. And he sees the Hasidim, you're talking about a different generation, with different types of Rebbes. Okay, the Rebbes today are not the Rebbes from the previous generation. Okay, today is not, but you go back, let's say 100 years. Okay, go back 100 years, there are certain Rebbes, Rosh Kodesh Kodashim. And a chassid goes to the Rebbe, you pour out your heart. It's a whole different way of life. So, yesh liyesh. Moshe Rabbeinu was a Roshiva. Moshe was Toras Moshe. Moshe was the Moshe Rabbeinu. It's not so long Toras Moshe. It's Toras Moshe. But Moshe was also Vayelech Lidroi Shalokim. Rebecca went to a Rebbe. Rebecca says, Lama Zeh Anochi. I worked so hard my whole life. For who and for what? And it all comes down to this. He wants to go to the Pesach Avodah Zarah. For who and for what? She went, Lidroi Shalokim. Klal Yisrael here, Moshe says, I'm the Rebbe here. The people are all, every person needs a Rebbe. They're all coming over here. They're all coming, Bo Elai Ha'am, Lidroi Shalokim.
The term says that there's a four Dalbim Sayers.
Yeah, what are the four other two? Nach?
Yeah.
Nach, there's a Nach.
Shmuel.
Shmuel, okay. Okay, I told you Chumash. Chumash. I only mean Chumash Musha. Okay, let's go to the next idea. Okay, we're going to get to maybe after. We're running out of time. Okay, boys, let's go to the next idea. Okay, now, this is a famous question. I have a new twist on a famous question. Okay, we have Moshe Rabbeinu. Yisro gives advice to Moshe Rabbeinu. Yisro gives advice to Moshe Rabbeinu. He says, "This is what I want you to do." The Atos Seches that we call him Anshe Chayil v'chulu v'chulu v'shavtu esam b'chol. This is a very famous question. This is the most famous question of the parasha. It's not shaykh for you not to know this question and not know a answer. V'haya kol hadavar hagadol. Yaviu elecha, the kol hadavar hakaton yishbituhe. With the division of labor, gadol versus katon. When Moshe listens, what does it say? V'shavtu esam v'choleis es hadavar hakoshe. Yaviu el Moshe, the kol hadavar hakaton yishbituhe. My high, the katon remained the katon. But the gadol was transformed into kosher. So my high. So our probably most popular answer is that Yisro was coming from a secular perspective, and from his perspective is things. If the shaila is a shaila $5, you have a shaila. The shaila is, does Reuben owe Shimon $5? And this shaila in halacha in lamdas is the most complex shaila in the world. It involves a Rabbi Kiva Eger, and a Ketzos, and a Nesivis, and a steer between two Ramas, and a Shach, and a Tas, and a very extremely difficult Prima Gadim. V'chulu, v'chulu. Okay? It's the most difficult Shaila in the world, and it's only Nogei Halacha L'maisa $5. It's also a lot of money for me. $5. Okay, $5. So in the view of Yisro, what is this? Yisro says, this is Dover Katon. $5. Big, I'll give you the $5. Okay, we'll go to the Chumrah. $5, big deal. Moshe, but in a shaila, $1 million shaila, a person walks into Bezdin, $1 million is on the line, and it's the Beferish of Shulchan Aruch, it's the Mechaber, and the Ramah, less man the Polig, the Mishnebura makes clarify, there's no Machloikis, the Balabatim, I'm Amaratzim. They don't know what it says in Shulchan Aruch. It's as easy as pie. It's $1 million, but it's Shulchan Aruch, no big deal. So Yisro's perspective, which one of these shailas is going to end up in the Supreme Court? The $1 million shaila. It's high profile, $1 million. Which one's going to go to the lower courts? The $5 shaila. Moshe says, you're mistaken. That's not what we're going to, how we're going to have division of labor. If it's an easy shaila in Shulchan Aruch, Mechaber Amah, that's katon. Who cares about the money? It's $1 million, it's going to go to the interns. Okay, the 18-year-olds who are here to watch, they'll pass in the shaila. The $5 shaila, that is kolol, kolat or kula, that's kosher. That's difficult.
But even then, the easier one could have been called kal instead of kosher.
Okay, that's a question. That's a question. We can work around it. Think about it. You can work around that question. But this I believe, is the most popular answer to the question. I've heard this sort of, okay. I want to give you a different answer. This answer I'm giving you is not purely mine, but the way I heard it is a little bit different, but I'm changing it the way it appeals more to me. Let me give you a mashal. You go to a doctor, okay? A chas v'shalom. First, let's go to a doctor. So you come, before you see the doctor, you go to a big mumcha, right? You wait a few months, going to put him the biggest mumcha in the world on this, in the issue. So before you come, you have to first speak to the secretary, you got to fill out all the forms, and then they send you to a special place to do the insurance. And then when they want to take blood, they send you somewhere else, x-rays, another mumcha, v'chulu, v'chulu, then to bring you into the office, another person, 20 people, they mashamish you until finally, vayovo, until the doctor finally walks in, the big mumcha walks into the office. So all the people until now, what are they doing? They're doing the davar katon, to clean the things, to take blood, to fill out the forms, this. The one that's going to assess the situation, the mumcha, he's going to be the davar hagodol. Go to a dentist, you have the hygienist, and you have all the paperwork, v'chulu, and the same thing. A teacher, you're a professor in college, the greater you are, the more stature you have, the more assistance, the more teacher assistance you'll have. You'll never have to grade a paper. It's torture. You know what it's like to grade papers? I used to teach. It's torture to grade papers, to make the exams. All the paperwork is overwhelming. So, if you're a big established professor, I come, I give the lecture, and I have five teaching assistants. One is going to take attendance. One is going to make the exams. One is going to grade the exams. One's going to submit the grades, v'chulu. I just give the lecture. The davar gadol. This is what Yisro told Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, we have a division of labor. You're not going to do all the nitty-gritty. Moshe Rabbeinu was doing all the nitty-gritty. He was doing the paperwork. He was marking the papers. Moshe was taking blood. Moshe was doing every little prat, the davar katon. And then finally, Moshe also gave the lecture. Moshe made the big decisions. Yisro said, this is foolish. There must be a division of labor. You'll be the davar hagadol. Everything else will be given to the davar hakatol. So Moshe listened. But Moshe discovered the reality. And this is the way it has to be, because the world has to be like this. But Moshe, what is the reality? The reality is that when you take away from a miktsoya, from a professional, the davar katon, and you allocate that to assistants, to your lackeys, then the big decisions that you make, the davar gadol you make, is no longer has the stature of gadol. It becomes koshe. It's not so much fun being a doctor anymore. It's not so much fun being a professor. It's a burden. It's koshe. There's a very big difference in connotation between gadol and koshe. They're both really the same. Something which is great is very difficult, because you don't. If it would be so easy, it wouldn't be so great. So they're really interchangeable. But it's the connotation. How do you perceive it? Are you proud of what you've accomplished? The davar gadol, I'm the big doctor. You know, I don't really enjoy it anymore. To me, it's just a big burden. It's a big achrayus to make these decisions. You know why you feel like that? Because you're not involved. You're removed. You are removed from your patients. You're removed from what you're doing. The only way for you to get to the madrega, that when you come to the spitz, when you come to the climax of what you're trying to accomplish and do, that it's in your eyes, gadol, which has the connotation, wow, I am an accomplished person. It's because you're also involved in the katon. You cannot separate the katon from the gadol. Once you start separating the gadol from the katon, it has to be like that. I'm not saying this is the world that we live in. This is the world of reality. That's the way it is. But the reality is, once there is a division of labor and you only going to do the davar gadol, it's not the same. You hear this from principals, people who used to be teachers, and then they get promoted, and they become principals. Oh, Baruch Hashem, I never will have to teach a class again in my life. I'll never walk into the classroom again in my life. Those are the worst principles. The best principles are the ones that give a class like every other teacher. You have a high school, you have an elementary school, so the principal also has a class. I also teach 6th grade. I also teach 8th grade. I teach like everyone else here in this building. I'm no different than anyone else. In addition, when you go home at 3 o'clock, I stay here until 12 o'clock because I'm also the principal. I got a lot of work to do. Those are the best. I remember Reb Chaim Siegel, Zecher Tzadik Livrach, he was like that. He was the 12th grade Rebbe, and he gave a shiur, more intense shiur, a harder shiur, involved, spent more time in the shiur than all the other Rebbeim, and he was also the principal. And he lived in the yeshiva 24/7. When you separate the katon from the gadol, and you only want to focus on the gadol, it's not so gishmak anymore. The gadol turns into koshe. It's difficult. It's not so much fun. It's not so the prestige, the gedula, the glamour, the glitter, all of that which goes along with it is severely reduced. Okay, let's go to another idea.
If you have the mishpat, a whole so you have to be only one thing.
Okay, in Echnami, they're, you're limited. I told you, the world of reality is this, you can't, it doesn't.
Is there a Shia Monday?
What's Monday?
President's
yes, Day. Yes, in Yirat Hashem. Okay, let's go to another idea. Okay, I'll tell you what, more of a joke. It's not really a joke. It's a joke. This is not a serious var. So don't quote me as this being a serious var. No, not at all. But there's truth to it. Okay, I like the joke more than the vart. So I'm telling you, that's why I'm telling you. I must have heard this probably 100 years ago, but this week someone reminded me of this. He was eavesdropping on a Rav. He was talking. And what did the Rav say? The Rav said as follows. He said about from Rav Yitzchok Kuttner, Zechet Tzadik Levrach, the Roshim of Chaim Berlin. He said as follows. You know, in Chaim Berlin, it's covered, I tell you, there's a lot of enemies I'm covered. So Rav Kuttner said as follows. He says, I'm just extrapolating, I'm just really adding more to what he said. Can a person be homeless? Can you live if you don't have a place to live? Yeah, you can live in the subway. You can survive for a very long time. The police will not pick you up, put you in a shelter for a long time. Until they'll take you away, you can go for months without a home. Plenty of time. Can you live without food? You can make many madrig, we're just going to be makatsa. Can you live without solid foods? How long can you live without solid foods? Dr. Fruchter? Solid foods. A week? Month?
No, people go on.
Forever? No, it's only water. What's it? Only water.
Prisoners go on fast, then they live forever.
Only water. Okay, so you live 2-3 weeks, month, whatever it is. Okay, let's say, how long? So you can survive. Okay, a home you don't need. You can live a very long time on the street until it gets very cold. Maybe you don't have a home. Maybe until you get frostbitten and you get sick from the cold, you can survive out in the wild for a couple of months at least. If you don't have solid foods, you'll go a couple of weeks. If you don't have water, a couple of days, a week maybe, whatever it is. What about air? How long can you hold your breath? No air? 4 minutes. Hey, whatever, 3 minutes, 2 minutes. Okay, you can go. You don't need air. You don't need air for go scuba diving. You don't need air. You can hold out. So, what about kavod? Kavod? Respect? You can't even live 1 second without kavod. It's true. Go ask a psychologist. A person deep down has dignity. You have a purpose. It's covered. You know who I am? I'm also a person. You can't deny the fact I'm also a human being. Everything you can do without for a certain amount of time. But you can't live without kavod for one moment. Now, what am I trying to say? Kabeid es avicha v'es imecha. Kavod, now it's not really a joke. There's really truth to this. Kavod is something which is constant. It's even more important than air. Why did the Torah say give kavod to your parents in the Aseres? Why didn't it say you should fear your parents, like it says in Parashas Kedoshim? Why does there no mitzvah to love your parents? It doesn't say these mitzvahs. It says give kavod. Why kavod? There's something about kavod that's very unique. Kavod is, you have to, again, it's a very deep idea. You have to really think about this and ask psychologists to understand what this means. Kavod is constant. It is a type of idea. If you respect someone, kavod means continuously. There's no breaks. Today I respect you, but tomorrow you're a piece of garbage. Love and hate, there's a scale. You love someone more, you love someone less. I'm angry, not angry. But kavod is something which real kavod is constant. When the Torah demands kabeid es avicha v'yasimecha, that's a very tall order. It's a very tall order in what the Torah demands of us. Okay, let's go to another idea. I'm going back to the parasha. Some short ideas. Okay, this idea, Vayishma Yisro. Something a little off the beaten track. Vayishma Yisro Koyin Midyan. The first Rashi says, who is Yisro? Shiva Shemois Nikru Ulo. He has 7 names. The first name is Ruel. Yeser Yisro Choyvav Chever Keni and Palpotiel. And Rashi goes on to describe in detail what these names refer to. And then Rashi says something very bizarre, extremely bizarre. I don't know if you pick up on this, Rashi. Rashi says, V'yeshav, some say, Ru'uel aviv shel Yisro haya. Ru'uel, good Shabbos. Ru'uel was not. Okay, Shabbos. Thank you so much. Okay, some say Ru'uel aviv shel Yisro haya. Ru'uel is not Yisro. Ru'uel is Yisro. What? Ru'uel is Yisro's father. Lamai Naftis. Why is Rashi telling us this? Why does Rashi here from all places need to make a note? Oh, by the way, I told you he has seven names. And Rashi goes on to explain, so why here did we select the name Yisro? Rashi says, because of Yisro, al shem sheyiter parsha achas ba'Torah. Because of Yisro, we have an additional parsha in the Torah. An additional parsha. Okay, so what's it all about? So I want to say the following drush. Go back to Parsha Shemos. In Parsha Shemos, we have to reread the psukim now based upon the idea that yes, that Ru'uel is Yisro. What happens here in Parsha Shemos? Moshe comes to, let me just find the pasuk. Moshe runs away from Paro, and he comes to the well. Okay. Ulukoy midyan sheva banos vayavo haroim vayigarshu vayakam Moshe vayoshion vayashke sinam vatavona el Ru'uel avihen. Rashi says when it's avihen means their grandfather. Rashi here in this pasuk says in Yisro, the daughters go to Ru'uel avihen, to Ru'uel their grandfather. What happened? Why not their father? I guess the father was working, right? So the grandparents are doing the babysitting. Why did you come back today so early? So who's this? This is Ru'uel, the grandfather. Where is he? As for Ish, why do you leave the Ish alone? Then the pasuk goes on to say, who does that Ish refer to now? Pashto says Moshe wanted to remain with the Ish, vayitain es tzipora vito l'Moshe. So it means clearly, Shudash al Mikra, that now we're calling in this pasuk Yisro by the name Ish. Vayoyel Moshe losheves es ho'ish. Because until now we were describing Ru'uel, and now we're switching from Ru'uel to Ish. Rashi is telling us, I want to suggest over here, is that Rashi is telling us, if you're going to say that Ru'uel is really the grandfather, is possibly the grandfather of, is the father of Yisro, that means that Yisro has, does not mean that Yisro has six names. What it means then, Yisro also has seven names, but Yisro's new name is not a name, it's he's called the Ish. So what's the significance of being called an Ish, not being called by name? It means Yisro was a nothing. The most important thing a person has is their name. If you don't have a name, you're a nothing. A person's essence is their name, no? The Farsh missed that question. The Farsh all asked that question. Moshe is never called Ish alone, never. Moshe is called Vicho Ish Moshe. He's always together with the word Moshe. He's never called an Ish alone. Even here, he's called the Ish Mitzri. Moshe is never called an Ish alone. Even though here it says Lamazaz Zaftanes, but it's not the way he calls it. That's the way they're referring to him because they don't know who he was. But when the Torah describes Moshe, he's an Ish Moshe. When you call a person an Ish, that's a very big insult. That basically means you have no identity. Okay, this anonymity. It's true. But basically, it takes away your identity. It's there by design. You're taking away your identity. This means that the very first time we come in contact with Yisro, if we're going to say, if Yisro's name is Ru'uel, okay, so everything here is talking about Ru'uel. We know who we can identify him. But if we're going to say that Ru'uel is the father of Yisro, that automatically means that Yisro here, that is also mentioned in this parasha, is called not by a name. He's called Ish. He's John Doe. But yeah, look what happened to John Doe. John Doe is responsible for an entire extra section in the Torah. There only would have been 53 parashios, and because of Yisro, there are 54 parashios. What is the Musar Haskel? The Musar Haskel is, through the Koyach of Torah, you can go from nowhere all the way to the top. Yisro has multiple names. Reuel, Choyvav, this, that, all these names. But there's also a possibility that Yisro started out as nothing more than as John Doe, as an anonymous individual, an ish. And look what became of him. Look what became. Because of Yisro, we have a whole parasha in the Torah. Al achas kama v'kama, if you're already starting out with a name, think how far you can go, how far you can go with that name, and what you can accomplish through the koyach of Torah. Okay, let's go to a little very quickly. I want to tell you two more short verilach. This is a real wild rush. This is wild as it gets. What? Okay, well, afterwards, take question afterwards. In the Aseres Hadibros, how many words are there? Letters are there in the Aseres Hadibros? Does anyone know? 620. Keser Yidnu Lucha. Keser is the gematria 620. And Chazal say it corresponds to the Tayag Mitzvahs plus the original Zayin Mitzvahs B'nei Noyach. Total of 620. It's by design. Now, I always wondered, many people wonder, why at the end of say, in Mishsech to Uxin, do we say, Osid HaKadosh Baruch Hu Lahanich Lechol Tzadik V'Tzadik Shai Olamas? So I saw this very interesting Jewish. What is Shai? Shai is 310. 310 is exactly... Shai is exactly half of... 310 is exactly half of 620. What does the Mishnah say in Mishnah? It doesn't say, Osak Hashem Lahanchil L'chol Tzadik Shai Olamas. L'chol Tzadik V'Tzadik. Two Tzadikim. If one Tzadik gets 310... and the other tzaddik gets 310, together they have 620. So what is the message? The message is, oi chavrusa, oi misusa. Torah is given with the number 620. Torah is double of what any one person on his own can accomplish. The most a person can accomplish is 310. Osa kashvachan chuchol tzaddik, v'tzaddik, shai olams. So where is my other half? Where is the other half of Torah? The only way you will succeed in connecting to the other half of Torah, to the mashlim, the number 620, is you have to connect with another tzaddik. Torah is indirectly teaching you the principle of oy chavrusa, oy misusa. The Torah cannot be for a yachid. There is no one person that can be kolel kol haTorah kulo. There is no one Torah organization that can make a claim. This is our Torah. We are the balabatim on Torah. There's no one else but us. You have your derech in Torah, but Torah is infinite. You have to appreciate there are other people in Klal Yisrael that have a different approach to Torah. And together with them, you will accomplish great things. But if you're going to claim you're an apikoros, your mahalach is no good, this is the only way you can learn Torah, the only derech, the only hashkaf in Torah. Torah is built in, the number, the magic number of Torah is 620. Tzadikim Yechidim, who they represent, at most get Shai, 310. You gotta connect with someone else. Don't make a claim that the Torah was only given to us. I'll give you a joke, and I don't mean this as an insult. Chasham, I have the greatest regard. This is just a joke. People, someone told me, I just find it very funny. Agudas Yisrael. They're wonderful. Wonderful organization. No, don't make them sense. So someone's good. They very much like to possess. They like the Sima Shas. No, it's our Torah. I just know a little joke. So someone once complained in a joking way. How do you know that if the Agudas Yisrael existed at the time of Matan Torah, they would have claimed that Matan Torah was an Aguda event? How do you know? Because they were not there. And they still claim it was an Aguda event. So culture came if they were there. This is a joke. Chas v'shalom, and Aguda is I'm saying is there's no such thing. And you see, Taka, Aguda is not like that. Aguda, if anyone, and is there any organization that goes out of their way to be inclusive in other organizations to some degree than other organizations, it's the Agudas Yisrael. You can't be all alone. There's not only one way to learn Torah. There are different people, different strokes for different folks. There are different hashkafas. L'chol tzaddik v'tzaddik, shay alamos. You have to go and connect with other people. Last vart. This is a very good vart. The last vart is the mizbeach. The mizbeach, the end of the Torah, you shall build the mizbeach. What's in the mizbeach? Three halachas. Number one, the mizbeach, you offer sacrifices l'Hashem levadai. Bilti l'Hashem levadai. That's what it says at the end of the parasha. You bring only korbanos to Hashem. Number two, the stones may not be cut with metal. Because if you cut the stone with metal, avonim shlemais, Rashi explains, because metal is a tool that is used to be makatzer yamav v'shonav shel adam, and the mizbech is meant to be marich yamav v'shonav, so therefore it has to be cut, you have to have complete stones. The third halach, it says you have to have a ramp, you now have to have steps. Shlosh sigole ervoscho olav. You should not take big steps and uncover yourself when you walk up the steps. So I saw the sefer, fascinating insight. What do we have over here with regard to the mizbeach? The gimel, averos chamuros, avoy dezara, gili arayos, and shichas damim. The purpose of the mizbeach is to bring korbanos only to Hashem. Let me read you that pasuk. The pasuk lo sasu nitil hechaz v'zav mizbeach adam atasli v'zavach talav esel losach v'yashamecha. Okay, b'chol mangas asker hashemi. It's only la Hashem. Only la Hashem. Atem lisim kimi hashmaim dibartim lo sasun iti elohi chesef lehizov lo sasu lechem. It's only Hashem. That's avodah zara. Next is, let's say shvichas damim. What kind of stones? Vimizbach avodim taseli lo sivne eshen gozis ki charbuchay nafto lach batechal leha. And the last thing is v'lesalev emaleis al mizbechi. That's gili arayis. So what's going on over here? Well, let me say two short ideas. First of all, the whole parasha Yisrael is laying out all of the yisaydis. The beginning of the parasha is teaching you derech eretz. Derech eretz kodma lata. Moshe Rabbeinu's hanhoga is kula derech eretz. How he greets his father-in-law, how he listens to his father-in-law, how he applies what his father-in-law told him to do. Kula derech eretz. Derech eretz kodma lata. The next are the Aseres Hadibros. You have to see the Rashi. Rashi explains what is unique about the Aseres Hadibros. All other mitzvahs, if you don't want to do it, don't do it. You won't get punished, you won't get rewarded. The Aseres Hadibros are mitzvahs you must do, even the negative ones. You must work your entire life. Rashi, a very powerful Rashi, to explain why the Aseres Hadibros are different than the Tayag mitzvahs. You must be involved continuously in doing and working on yourself that you should not violate the Aseres Hadibros. The other Tayag mitzvahs, if it's not nogei me, I'm not involved. I don't have to get involved. To be a kaisein, I have no shaykhis to magic, I don't have to get involved. But the Aseres Hadibros, when it says in the pasuk like sachmod, you got to work on yourself, whether you like it or not. Even though you think you may not covet other people's property, you don't realize you do. You got to work on yourself. Don't worship idols. You think you're not worshiping idols? I'm sorry to tell you, you are worshiping idols. The almighty dollar. Okay, there are many different examples. There's what to work on. And then at the end of the parasha comes another halacha, Gimel Averos Chamuros. The Parashas Yisro, 72 psukim, is the Shem Hashem. It is called the Yisoidos of the Torah. Derech Eretz, Kodma La Torah. Aseres Hadibrois is a category in by itself. And then at the very end, if you want to summarize, that may be too much for the Aseres Hadibrois, there are the Gimel Averos Chamuros. The second idea is, when you're standing on top of the Mizbeach, and you're offering a sacrifice to Hashem, you got to ask yourself, how did I get here? When you're sitting at the Amud on a yard site and davening to Hashem, the Mokam Korbanos, I got the Amud. Look at that. I got the Amud today. How did I get here? Who did I kill? Who did I kill? Who did I murder? Did I push out? Lo Sirtzach. Who did I take away from? Gili Arayis, the most private possession of a person is his wife. When it says, Gili Arayis, that's a mashal, don't take away what belongs to your friend. I didn't kill anyone. We're all good. We're all peaceful. But he feels bad. I took away what really was meant to be for him. Whenever a person is promoted to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you're on top of that Mizbeach, make sure you didn't pay a very heavy price of Gili Arayos or Shvichas Damim in what they represent. Okay, we'll stop here. Have a wonderful Shabbos.